Maine is the most forested state in the nation, with around 90% of land in tree cover. These forests provide timber and jobs, recreational opportunities, and critical habitat for wildlife. They also sequester and store carbon, playing a valuable role as a climate change mitigation tool. However, the impacts of climate change pose threats to them as well, including increased pest and disease pressure and changes in temperature that impact the species living here today. All of these factors combine to make the sustainable management of Maine's forests a complex undertaking. Today on Common Ground Radio, we'll be exploring low-impact forestry, an approach that is based in ecology while also allowing for economically sound forestry practices. We'll also be diving into assisted migration, the practice of planting trees adapted to different temperatures to help shift their range and adapt to climate change. I'm Holly Cederholm, your host for a conversation about local food and organic agriculture, brought to you by the Maine Organic Farmers and Gardeners Association. Today, I'm joined by Maddie Eberle, MOFCA's Low Impact Forestry Specialist. Maddie holds dual degrees in forestry and botany from the University of Maine, and they obtained their intern forester's license in 2022. Maddie, welcome to Common Ground Radio.
Thanks, Holly. I'm excited to be here with you.
So let's start by getting a sense of Maine's forests. Can you talk a little bit about the makeup of the forests found here and their distribution throughout the state?
Sure. So the forests in Maine, I'm going to take us on a little history journey here. So about 14,000 years ago, we were under a mile of ice, the Laurentide Glacier or ice sheet. And so when that, glacier shifted out, it scraped away a lot of our soils. The ground was compacted. And so as that happened, the water from the ocean came in, and then the land raised and the water went back out. And so that kind of created this landscape for plant life to plant and animal life to come back into the landscape. And so they kind of started with like spruce trees. So there's these spruce refugia, which just means there's a safe spot for them to grow, and that let them come onto the landscape pretty early on. And, species came and went from the landscape, and our ecosystems that we have today aren't necessarily what they were 10,000 years ago, and things just kind of shifted over time. But the forests we have today, we often call them the Acadian forests. And if you pop over into Canada, they call it the Wabanaki Acadian forests. And so basically, that's kind of an acknowledgement that we have a lot more of cold-tolerant species here. And so depending on where you are in the state of Maine, it's going to be a different forest type that you're in. So there's like a lot of like spruce fir down east, in the western mountains. That's where we have a lot of our maple sugaring happening. So like really gorgeous mixed wood forests, meaning there's hardwoods like your maples, and then there's also, your softwoods like your white pines. And so, southern Maine, we have a lot of more of our warm adapted trees down that way, including some trees that are adapted to fire, and they need the presence of that disturbance to reproduce. So throughout Maine, we have quite a range of forest types, but all together, we're generally the Acadian forest.
I didn't realize we had fire-adapted tree species. What are some examples of species that need that disturbance?
Sure. Yeah. So there's only a few areas that are being actively maintained with fire. And so we generally call those areas pine barrens. And so the overstory tends to be things like red pine, pitch pine, jack pine sometimes. And there's also some oaks that do well with that. And there's scrub oaks, which is kind of like a small shrubby oak that you'll find in the understory. And so they do really well there. And you'll always find, your heaths, like your blueberries and a few other shrubby, like fire adapted species. And so when fire is on the landscape, what it does is it kind of burns up that organic layer that we think of a lot when we think of the forests here in Maine. So it creates this kind of early successional opportunity. But also it's a lot drier of an environment. The soils tend to be sandy. Thinking back to that glacier, there's a lot of like kind of like closer to the coast area, there's a lot of landscape that's has a higher sandy composition from that time. And that's definitely like a soil type that is beneficial to these fire adapted ecosystems because it creates a slightly more, I guess, slightly arid, you could maybe say, but just a drier condition.
That's so interesting. Thinking a little bit more about how forests are managed, you had talked about how there are only a few of these forests that are managed this way in Maine. I'd like to shift into generally management approaches for Maine's forests. So you work with the Maine Organic Farmers and Gardeners Association as their low impact forestry specialist. And low impact forestry is an approach to forestry that minimizes environmental impact and promotes social and ecological benefits. I'm wondering if you could talk about some of the guiding principles of low impact forestry and kind of introduce people to those concepts.
Yeah, so our program here, the Low Impact Forestry Program, as you mentioned, we do have 9 guiding principles, which you can find them to read through them in great detail on our website. Basically, they kind of all boil down to thinking about the sustainability of our forest practices. So thinking about, the soil health, like how much soil disturbance is occurring while we're working in our woods. And if we are disturbing the soil, how can we be kinder to it and less cause less erosion and less compaction? Or, there's some tree species that do well with a little bit of soil disturbance. So it's not necessarily that we want to entirely eliminate that, but we want to minimize it to think about the greater health of the ecosystem. So another thing is water quality. So that goes pretty hand in hand with soil. Whenever there is a wet area or a stream crossing, we want to think about how do we preserve or conserve the health of that stream. So preventing any erosion from like poor stream crossings, as well as changing the way in which the water flows. So there's, historically, there has been a lot of usage in the logging industry to take really tiny streams and to block them up and have them fill up with water, and then to run logs through these minuscule streams in our forests. And so that, there's evidence of that all over the state. That's a very dramatic impact that is no longer done for many reasons. And so, just kind of like that's an extreme example. And so just thinking about how we can, maintain that stream, the natural course of the stream, where there's like areas with slow water, areas with fast water, tiny substrate for, different fish and invertebrates versus these larger rocks, and just kind of keeping that structural diversity within the stream is super important. And so creating good stream crossings is part of that, and also planning to cross the stream as few times as possible just helps to further minimize that. So a good layout of your harvest is super important. And other things to think about in that regard would be, like for your vernal pools, the salamanders need like to use the leaf litter and organic materials to travel from wet locations to the vernal pools so that they can lay their eggs and be protected from fish so that the eggs can actually hatch and grow. And so if we have a harvest trail that goes right through that passage, it compacts the ground in such a way that those passages for those amphibians to travel no longer exist. So it's kind of the when we're thinking about low impact forestry, there's these things called BMPs, best management practices, that everyone who does forestry work in Maine, those are the guidance that you are held to by the state and the laws, but they kind of are the bare minimum. So take low impact forestry is like, okay, so like here's the bare minimum, but what can we do better? What can we do a little that's a little bit extra to make sure that we're really focused on the long-term success of this ecosystem?
So you're talking about low impact forestry practices as sort of like an add-on to these basic set of practices that all people should follow when working in the woods. So the adoption of low impact forestry still allows for the harvest of lumber and wood products. It's not something that you can't do on top of, some economic goals you might have for your woodlot. Is that correct?
Yeah, absolutely. I would say the low impact forestry program generally has been focused on managing for timber. It's very much so focused on creating the education opportunities for folks to learn about the forest and how to, safely use equipment and get out there and do the work themselves. So low impact, it can mean a million different things, depending on who you ask. So for some folks, it's low impact forestry just means horse logging. For other folks, it means I'm out there with my tractor and a farm winch. For other folks, it's ATV logging. And for some folks, they will be out there with larger equipment, but trying to minimize their impact in the greatest way they can. Low impact forestry absolutely can be focused on timber, but just kind of want to acknowledge here that, a forest management plan, which is a document that's prepared by a forester typically. But if you're not doing timber harvesting on your property, this is something that anyone could write. Within a forest management plan, you outline your goals for the property. And so for here at MOFCA, timber is one of our number one priorities. So we're teaching people how to safely do those practices and sustainably do those practices. But for other folks, you can have wildlife as number one on there. You could have recreation as number one on there.
So, low impact forestry takes into consideration both climate change mitigation and adaptation. Why are forests important in terms of carbon sequestration?
So that has been a big part of the programming here. So carbon sequestration is when you're taking the carbon from the air, the atmosphere, and the trees take that in through their gas exchange processes that they use for, making food for themselves and for, a bunch of different things that they need to function as individual organisms. They take that carbon in, and through their processes, it becomes stored as part of their structures, so like additional wood or big branches, roots, just kind of that whole bit of carbon storage is throughout the tree. When we think about our forests, we're thinking about, are they taking in carbon, and then how much are they actually storing? So how big are the trees, and how many trees are there? And so a young forest will sequester carbon a lot faster than an older forest, but an older forest stores way more carbon than a younger forest. So within forestry, we're trying to find that balance of, while we're needing these wood resources, as a society, our houses are made out of wood. We in Maine here have a large culture of burning wood in our stoves. So there's a definite need and usage for us to be in those woods harvesting. But it's how can we, with the current climate change that we are experiencing, how can we use our forests as a resource to help mitigate that, global phenomenon that is occurring.
You are listening to Common Ground Radio on WERU 89.9 FM. I'm Holly Cederholm, and on today's show, I'm talking with Maddie Eberly, the Low Impact Forestry Specialist with the Maine Organic Farmers and Gardeners Association. Common Ground Radio can be heard on the second Thursday of each month at 4 p.m. on 89.9 FM and at weru.org. What are some of the ways that folks might approach balancing the equation in terms of they're looking for sequestration versus storage in terms of like their management plan? Maybe that's too complicated to get into here, but can you give maybe an example of some of the things folks are considering when thinking of those two processes?
There's some different extremes that can be taken here. So some folks will take the approach of not managing for timber. And so if they're doing any forest management practices, it's kind of to advance it farther. So trying to push it to a point where it is storing more carbon rather than focusing on how much is actually sequestering. We are very humanly impacted forested landscape here. Our forests from where they are now to a more of an old growth type of condition. Human intervention often is needed. There's a lot of different, like, introduced plant species that can outcompete species that were on the landscape previously. There's can be really dense young forests, and eventually those will, transition from like a young successional forest to an older successional forest. But to nudge it along, you might, do some thinning in the forest, so removing, competition trees that will like soon die, just to kind of give an advantage to the trees that are there so that they can be healthier once they reach the overstory.
And so another approach too is, you can definitely be managing for carbon storage and sequestration while you're having timber as one of your primary goals. And that is especially a lot of our forests are like pasture regrown. So if you come walk in our woodlot here in Unity, you'll notice a lot of our pine have split tops, and small canopies, and they're not necessarily the happiest pine trees, and that's because they were pasture grown. So they came back and they were in dense competition, and the weevils, which is a little insect, were eating the leader branches or the leader buds, which causes kind of that squiggly appearance to them as they kind of recover from that predation. We're definitely managing with like carbon storage and sequestration in mind here at Mavka, but the way that we are focusing on that is just increasing the overall health of the forest rather than removing the human impact entirely, because we can make that transition happen more rapidly so that we could see a healthier ecosystem overall.
So you mentioned forest pests, or at least a forest pest, and I'm wondering about other pests and diseases that are present in the forest today, specifically as a result of climate change. So in addition to forests being sort of a tool in the toolkit for climate mitigation, climate change is also actively affecting Maine's forests or is projected to impact them in the future. So, what are some of the things that are happening in the woods specific to climate change?
When we think about climate change in the woods, there's the drought, and then there's increased temperatures and increased rainfall events in between those drought periods, and there's more storms with greater severity. These things that there was kind of a more predictable rhythm to, it's kind of shifting. So we don't necessarily always have the snow cover that we used to here, and we don't necessarily have those harsh temperatures. Our springs aren't always wet. Sometimes they're dry, or sometimes they're way too wet. And sometimes that wetness continues through the year, and it's way too much water for what our forests are used to. And so when we think about those conditions, and then we take these forest pests, some of the ones that impact people directly, we think about like our brown-tailed moths, and we think about our ticks. The brown-tailed moth does impact our trees. They cause defoliation, and that can be detrimental to the long-term health of an individual tree. But people are greatly affected by the hairs on our bodies, and so that's why I'm bringing that as an example. Feels a little more tangible sometimes to think about the way that we as people are impacted. And so, because we've been having like this irregular weather, the brown-tailed moth populations, when we have a wet spring, there's this fungal growth that occurs that depletes their populations. And so they don't have as much of a competitive edge. When we have a dry spring or periods of drought, that fungal growth can occur because it requires that like higher moisture. And so we have, a greater amount of brown-tailed moth and much higher impacts in our forests with defoliation, but also with people and with ticks, not having those winter freezes. So the ticks are pretty active year-round anymore, whereas that, wasn't previously the case. And ticks even are generally new to Maine as their range is shifting. The temperatures are becoming more favorable for them to live year round. And we see that impacting our moose populations as well with the winter tick. And that just kind of has compounding effects as you go out. So our moose are eating trees, and so there's less of that browse from them. And so then there's also, our introduced pests that we think about with like our emerald ash borer, and we have our hemlock woolly adelgid, and we have our beech leaf disease, and we have our beech bark disease. And all of these things, are affected by those wet and dry, those temperature changes. And so it gives them a competitive edge where our forests are already stressed out by not having the water resource they need or having too much water, and that moisture just, prevents the correct exchanges of gas and can cause rot because the fungal growth is rocking. The pests that are naturally here, like spruce budworm, and thinking about how our forests are going to be able to fare with those additional stressors to the stress that is caused by climate change as a whole. So it's definitely, there are ways that we can think about forest management. For hemlock woolly adelgid, you can clear some of the competing trees around, and that creates a little bit more airflow, like it creates a drier environment. So it's less favorable for the reproduction of that insect. For things like emerald ash, it's a pretty successful insect in killing trees, unfortunately. we can try to create sunlight openings and like gaps in our forests, and that allows more regeneration. And that then, as the trees die from this initial influx of the insect, then there will be new trees to grow back in. There's like a balance to it all, and having someone, talk to you about it when you're thinking about your own woodlot is definitely helpful. And so like your district forester is a great resource for that. With the Maine Forest Service, there's one for every region, and they're super willing to talk with you. And there's also your district conservationists with the Natural Resource Conservation Service who are willing to chat with you about cost share, funding opportunities. There's people who are willing to chat with you and help find potential solutions or mitigation. I do also want to plug the lab at UMA. It's the Ash Protection Collaboration across Wabanaki. And so they're really a phenomenal resource to talk about seed saving and kind of the cultural importance of ash for the different Wabanaki nations and tribes in our state.
So you mentioned that temperature and changing temperatures are one of the things that our forests are dealing with. And you also mentioned this idea of range shifting in relation to ticks. So ticks as insects are more mobile than plants are. So there's something that MOFCA is experimenting with. It's called assisted migration, which helps the trees sort of shift their ranges in accordance to the changing temperatures. And I'm wondering if you could talk a little bit about this practice and the experimental plot that MOFCA has in Unity.
Yeah, absolutely. So I guess I want to take a little step back and kind of explain what assisted migration is a little bit more. There's a couple different ways to think about assisted migration, but basically, we're taking trees that are adapted to a more southern location that's warmer, drier, potentially more like what Maine will be in the not so distant future. And we're taking trees from that area, and we're bringing them farther north to an area that isn't quite at that type of ecosystem yet. So, not as hot, not as dry, but soon to be. So, the reason we're doing that is because the way in which trees, the way that they reproduce is very slow. So, for a tree to reach maturity, to produce seeds, and then to have those seeds spread the distance that they are capable of traveling, whether it's, by wind or by water or by animals, it's slower in the distance that they can travel through those natural processes than the rate at which our climate is changing, which is an accelerated rate from what has been historically like recognized or recorded. What we're doing is we're taking these trees farther north, and we're hoping that they will reach maturity and be able to produce seed and kind of give this edge to the forest so that as we're seeing trees disappear from our landscape because they can no longer stand that intense heat, that drought condition, whatever the stressor is that finally causes them to disappear from our landscape here, we're going to have a tree species that is present that can produce that seed resource for our small mammals that, creates these niches that will be serving our ecosystem as a whole, whereas those things might have been lost because we're losing tree species from the landscape, but we're bringing the more southern ones to try to mitigate that overall harm. So we had a grant through the Maine Forest Service called Project Canopy. And if you're a town or municipality, it's a great opportunity to get some trees planted. Would recommend it. And so we have two separate plots that are part of one whole project that we planted trees this past spring as well as the spring before. So there's 28 trees in total, and they're all trees that are native to, the southern bits of Maine or very close to there. So they're trees that were recommended by NIAACS, which is the Northern Institute for Applied Climate Science. So they did a full analysis of what trees are expected to do well, not only with a range shift, but also with the effects of climate change, trees that will be a little bit more tolerant to those stressors. And so we took those trees and we planted them in our forest here. And so we're just kind of waiting and seeing how well they do. They make it throughout their first or second, for some of them, Maine winter, and just kind of monitoring them. And so far, we've had good success. We've only had a couple casualties from the first planting, and those were replaced this year. So we're hoping that it will be a long-term successful project, and provide an example too for folks who just want to do something in their own backyard. It's a great little experiment to do, with your neighbors or family or whoever. Something else I want to mention though, so assisted migration. So we took species that are more southerly and brought them north. Another way of doing assisted migration is to take species that are already here, but take the seed stock, so those genetics that have been adapted to those warmer, more southern climates. So, taking seeds from the south and bringing them north. And so, there's kind of that other side of assisted migration, too, of just kind of thinking about rather than introducing species, we could also do something to help the species that are currently here remain on the landscape by bringing those more southerly, warm adapted genetics further north.
So, what tree species have been planted in MOFCA's experimental assisted migration plot?
So we have our sassafras, we have tulip poplar, and we have our white oak, which is actually kind of within its northern extent of its range, like very close to us here, like a town or two over. So it's kind of a fun one to have in an assisted migration plot because it takes people by surprise because they're like, I know this tree already. We have our redbud, which is very beautiful. We have our eastern ninebark. And some of the crowd favorites are the persimmon and the pawpaw. Those ones people get very excited about. Come visit our plot, and they're well labeled, so you can check them all out.
You mentioned folks can get in touch with you. Would you be willing to share an email or a web page where people can learn more about your work and MOFCA's low impact forestry program?
Yeah, absolutely. So I can be reached at forestry@mofca.org. That's forestry at mofga.org. And if you go to the MOFCA website, there is a page there that is specific to low impact forestry.
Well, Maddie, thanks so much for spending this time sharing more about Maine's forests.
All right, thank you.
This has been Common Ground Radio, which airs on the second Thursday of each month at 4 p.m. on WERU Community Radio 89.9 FM. Archives of previous episodes can be found on WERU.org, as well as the WERU app. I'd like to thank Maddie for joining me today. I'd also like to thank the show's editor, Claire Boland. Stay tuned for more great programming.